Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me, as always, is Maria. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. You?
Very good, thanks. And special guest author, Stephen Rossiter. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, I am very well, thank you very much. And delighted to join you guys and delighted to be invited. And Maria, you made my day, believe it or not, even just in your short reply, because I have a big beef with grammar. And
right.
I noticed that most people in this day and age, when they're asked, how are you? They're saying, I'm good. And this came from America. And it riles me. I'm good. But it's grammatically incorrect. You know, good is an adjective. Well is an adverb. So, a sad individual that I am. I pick up on these kind of things. And I try to spread the grammatical word. But, you know, you have to be careful because, you know, you can't be too patronizing either and so on. I don't ever mean to be, but it's one of those little pet things of mine. Anyways, so I'm very well, thank you. It's fun Friday, you know what I mean?
Well, you have a writer's attention, no, to all these things like grammar and how to express yourself, and we're going to ask you about all those things over the course of this interview. But also, we want to ask you, because we know you lived in Spain for a while, you traveled there frequently.
Yes.
So, Stephen, like, have you found something in Spanish culture that you think is very unique to the Spanish and is difficult to find maybe elsewhere?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I know the Irish will be regarded as, you know, very warm and welcoming, but I have to say, I always felt from, and you know, I'm not maybe that qualified to speak on it, but I feel, having lived in Spain for 2 years, and now, you know, I've been over there many, many times over the years since, that I feel a little bit qualified to be able to say that I actually find the Spanish really a fun-loving bunch of individuals, very, very warm and welcoming, very genuine. And I actually feel that they surpass the Irish as regards friendliness and so on. It's a very genuine friendliness. And there was so much, I mean, even, you know, when I was very young heading out there, wide-eyed and innocent and so on, but I just found there was so much of a culture that I noted with the Spanish. You know, we have over in Ireland, you know yourselves, St. Patrick's Day. And what I love about St. Patrick's Day is because it's there's a sense of community, and you don't get that very often. You can get it down in our local town as well on a Christmas Eve, say, for example, when everybody is out, and it's lovely. But I find that with Spanish culture, there are so many more opportunities to experience the coming together of communities. They have so many different festivals and feast days. And I just think, obviously, the weather helps as well. But when you're out of an evening and you're sitting down and having a beer and just this lovely gathering of people, and you can just feel their happiness and their warmth. And I think there's just very fun loving bunch of people. I mean, if you consider some of the, even just the festivals that they have, you know, the Tomatina Festival in Buñol, and the up in Pamplona as well, the running of the bulls and so on. I mean, they are absolutely incredible. I mean, where else would you find that kind of there's a naughtiness, there's a danger, there's just a whiff of just good fun, but it's very colourful, and I love all of that. And you know, and it when you have a backdrop of so many sunny days and warmer weather, and a culture that allows people to sit outdoors and enjoy the fresh air and the beautiful sunsets and so on, it's and swallows swooping down, for example. It really lends itself to a wonderful place to be out and meeting people. And I know the Spanish have a reputation for arriving late for appointments and get-togethers, but when they're out, they make up for that lost time. And yeah, it's wonderful to experience.
Well, actually, the next question I was going to ask you was about how traveling has influenced your writing, if it has, in how. But I think you've given a few clues there already.
Yeah,
but
a little bit,
do you want to? If you want to tell us a little bit
sure, yeah.
more, you can, by all means.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, sure, for sure. Us Human Towers, this novel I've written, I mean, that was, of course, influenced by my time in Tarragona, but not just, you know, when I lived there, but because in the last number of years, I have returned there twice a year. I go back in the spring and autumn just because it's too hot and bothersome and humid in the summertime. And I mean, I was even warned about the weather by a local when I was living out there about the summers, how torrid they are. So, but I was very much influenced by Tarragona, for example, in writing of Us Human Towers. Initially, I was actually trying to decide on a setting for the novel, and then I thought, well, where do you know best? Because I had traveled a lot in America, but I know Tarragona better than anywhere else apart from my own hometown. So I thought, listen, that's the obvious place. But also as well, I love the city so much, and I don't do big. So I mean, okay, it's a population of about 240,000, but I never kind of even saw it as a city. I just more saw it as a town because it's so easy to navigate. And so that would have influenced me to write the book. I wanted to share this city with readers. I wanted people to see what I saw. And it was a lot of fun because I you know, the places that I brought the reader to in the novel are the places that I hang out in. So there was a kind of a personal side to it in that regard as well. Come and see the Tarragona that I visit, and my daily routine, the different places I go to, whether it be the cafes or the bars or the beaches, it's all there. And bringing out that sense of history as well. You feel like you're going back in time because, you know, the Romans were one of the main tourists there back in the day, and they left their mark. And what a wonderful mark as well, those lovely narrow cobble streets and the amphitheatre, which is very much intact, and the aqueduct and many, many more Roman ruins as well. So it was a great joy to kind of share all that with a reader. And in other writings I've done as well, it was very important to me always to leave my own country in writing terms and find somewhere, you know, kind of maybe exotic or just somewhere that was more colourful. So, I mean, one of the novels that I wrote many, many years ago that I'm currently rewriting, that was set in Israel, it's about two thieves who died on a fictionalized account of the two thieves who died on the cross with Jesus. And I felt, you know, that was over 30 years ago when I started writing that, and I felt like I can't write this story unless I get a feel for the place. So I went out to Israel, and I spent I think it was about 5 days out there. I stayed in Jerusalem. I flew out to Tel Aviv, stayed in Jerusalem, and even back then the security was a huge issue out there. And for example, one day I had intended taking a bus to Bethlehem from Jerusalem, and the buses were off that day. So it was a 6 mile journey. But I decided, well, I still want to see Bethlehem. So I ended up walking it and back again. So it was a 12 mile round trip. But it was exactly what I needed to do in terms of my writing, because I was just on a main road. It was very, very quiet. But on either side of the main road, there were olive groves and there were goat herders. And I felt like this is exactly what I wanted to see. This is how I pictured what it might have been like back in Jesus' time. And so it proved a very fruitful trip for me. And I also bought a book at the time as well, trees and plants and flowers of Israel. So that would have helped me with some of the, you know, the details that I was putting in as well in some of my more descriptive writing. And then another book then that I'm hoping to have published this year with you guys, Iverna, is Sorry, that's the one that I haven't published, hopefully with you guys this year. And then another novel then that I'm rewriting at the moment is Sundog, which is set in a Kansas cow town back in 1871. And so I had spent a lot of time traveling in America during my summer holidays over the years. And I had a great interest, and still do have a great interest, in the Wild West. So my journeys in America then would have informed my writing in that regard, because I was always gravitating towards places associated with the Wild West, be it Tombstone in Arizona, which I've visited seven times, I think, at this stage, or the Custer Battlefield site up in Montana, and old mining towns. So lots of different places that I would have seen on my travels in America were able to help me my research and just open up my mind to those Wild West settings as well. So yeah, it has been very important. And, you know, would I ever get around to writing some fiction set in Ireland? I probably don't see that happening. But at least with my poetry, you know, my poetry has been set locally and mostly. And so that's kind of my only nod to anything Irish in my writing. So, yeah, I like going off to foreign lands. And I guess I like to take my readers as well off to those lands as well and see what I see and open up their minds maybe a little bit, you know.
Oh, wonderfully joyous, and, you know, kind of traveling and using that as the influence as well. And apart from, you know, these different cultures, I want to ask you as well, because you were a teacher, weren't you, Stephen?
I was, for my sins. Yeah? I was.
So do you think being a teacher can facilitate being a writer in some sense, because they both rely on communication, sharing knowledge, sharing insight?
Well, I tell you, my so I was a language teacher, and when it came to teaching English, my favorite part of the teaching was the creative writing. So I used to love, you know, and obviously students had to do this anyway, writing essays and short stories. My all-time favorite part of that whole teaching aspect was just correcting their work and trying to help them to become better writers. So I guess those different aspects of, say, putting together a story were very resonant with me in my own writing as well, because I felt like, you know, I'm looking at their stories and I can tell them what's good and what's bad, and trying to tell them how to develop a story well. So I those different aspects I was always, you know, highlighting in my own writing too. For example, you know, develop your characters, develop a setting, put a twist at the end if you can. It's an optional extra, but it makes it a lot more interesting. Pay attention to some descriptive writing. So all those aspects, I was hammering into students for most of my teaching career. And so, and I always said to them as well, I said, look, when I'm, say, for example, I'm correcting a story of yours, I'm just ticking boxes mentally in my head. Did you develop your characters? You know, did you have some descriptive writing and so on? So I that's what I'm doing then myself in my own writing. And, you know, I'm always trying to give the reader what I was trying to instill in students as well. And I love doing that, you know, because they're just, these are all fundamentals for me in writing. And the only thing I would say is that my plots, I never paid any real heed to plots. And my favorite authors, I didn't need to see, you know, a well-developed plot or anything in their stories. But it was, I'm so in love with language and words. So as long as, you know, the writing was very descriptive, very poetic, and it just grabbed me, that was enough for me, you know. As regards communication, when I'm writing, I suppose in my head I'm visualize what I'm writing, and so I'm always conscious of the reader, that I want the reader to see what I see, and so I do try to put in as many details as I can in my writing as well. I don't want to shortchange the reader. I'll always be trying to be true to the reader, you know, because I won't be happy myself. There's a little quality control mechanism going on with my own writing, as I'm sure with every writer, that, you know, you want to put together something that you feel might be appreciated, you know, for in terms of the reader.
That's very insightful in terms of what you like saying to other people about the writing, but obviously your writing would have been influenced by other writers before. So can you tell us maybe a couple of writers that have inspired you?
Yeah, sure. I have to say I'm very fussy about who I read, and I always have been over the years. And I think what kind of started my whole writing as well was I went through a phase at one stage where I just couldn't be satisfied by what I was reading. And I had a little conversation myself at one stage, and I said, you know, the book that you want to read is the book that you're going to have to write yourself. And that probably kicked off my fiction writing. But subsequently, I have come across some amazing writers, mostly American, I have to say. So I suppose the early days, really Cormac McCarthy, and I kind of stumbled upon writers by accident almost. I mean, I was in a bookshop in Dublin, Hodges Figgis, many, many years ago, and I was just looking for something to read, and I just happened to pick up Cormac McCarthy's novel, Sutri. And I was blown away by it. And so I've read everything of his since. And so he really influenced me, I suppose, because I found him to be extremely descriptive. And, you know, I'd be reading the first few chapters of one of his novels, and I'm going, he can't sustain this. This is unbelievable. But he would have, and he did. And so I was blown away by how descriptive his writing was. I loved anything, you know, poetically in prose. So he was a great influence, an inspiration to me, I suppose, for a long time. I went through, I was reading E.N.E. Prue's novels as well. I read particularly her novel Postcards. I read a number of times, and I really enjoyed that. William Faulkner was just really one of these literary gods to me. I just loved his writing. It was quite different, and he takes us down. He brings us to, you know, the southern states in America, and, you know, the settings, the characters, the plots, they might be dealing with, very people from very poor backgrounds, deprived and so on, in difficult situations. And I often think that maybe it's because I always felt like I have a very comfortable middle class background, if you like. And so I find this kind of very fascinating to be reading about other people's lives. They're less well off, they're deprived, and they're struggling and so on. And something about that really appealed to me. And I would have found that as well in Cormac McCarthy's writing too. And from an Irish point of view, James Joyce, I mean, I was reading James Joyce while I was in university, even though I wasn't actually studying him that much. I was very fortunate to have David Norris lecturing me on Joyce. He was, you know, one of the regarded as renowned Joycean scholar. And so he was a great inspiration to me as regards James Joyce. What really fascinated me about James Joyce was actually his book Finnegan's Wake, and I never got a chance to study that. We got up to Ulysses with James Joyce University, but we never went into Finnegan's Wake. But I ended up reading it twice myself during my college years, and it's incredibly complex and challenging and difficult, but so rich. I wouldn't be pretending to understand a fraction of it, but I loved what he was doing with language. And what I also loved about Joyce was, and it struck me, and then I read about it, that I always felt that Shakespeare had such an influence on me when I was young. I loved Shakespeare, but when I came across James Joyce, I just felt that, well, we know Shakespeare, we call him a genius, and I know it can be a term that's overused these days, but you know, he genuinely was. And I used to be trying to explain this to students, what made Shakespeare so good. And you know, I would say it was the quantity and the quality of his work. And so when I started looking at James Joyce then, I started thinking to myself, why can't James Joyce be regarded every bit as much of a genius as William Shakespeare? And I did read something then a while back that was basically saying that James Joyce himself would have considered himself to be every bit as good. And I found that fascinating, because here was an Irish man who was taking on an English man's language and doing every bit as much with it and taking it on to another level as well, particularly, you know, when he got to the Finnegan's Wake. And I loved that about him. And I said, absolutely, why not? So Shakespeare was writing drama and his poetry, but why couldn't James Joyce be regarded as every bit a great literary figure? And you know, mostly what he was doing was in prose. And so that's what I really like about it as well. And like, Shakespeare has been sacred to us, but I like the idea that there is room for other writers as well to be recognised, to be every bit as good. You know, Joyce was writing at a different time period and he was writing in a different genre, but there is no reason why we can't consider him to be every bit as much an equal as Shakespeare, which I do, you know. And yeah, loved what he was doing. And to be honest with you, when it comes to James Joyce these days, I don't tend to read his own writing, but what I do tend to do is I read a lot of books of notes, and it allows me to see just how much work and how brilliant a writer he was, what he was trying to do. And there's an endless amount of books. So mostly if I make a trip to Dublin once or twice a year, I'm going into the big bookshops and looking for more books of notes relating to Joyce's writings, and maybe even a graphic kind of novel description of his life, anything at all that would just kind of allow me to see what he was at and what his life and times were like as well. So yeah, I've been really blessed with so many different writers who inspired me. Laterally, I would say it's James Lee Burke. I'm not really into the whole thriller genre, but I know I read there a while back that it's now the biggest selling genre in bookshops. And I know a number of people who love their thrillers. So my brother Joe, many, many years ago, he had given me a James Lee Burke novel, and I was gathering dust for years, I'm ashamed to say. And I'm so grateful to my brother Joe now, because I've ended up buying almost every single book of James Lee Burke's, and he has quite a literary canon and still writing as well, which is incredible. And I absolutely love his writing. So he is different characters and different settings. So he's principally two main characters that he writes about, one in Louisiana, another one in Texas, and there are some now as well in Montana. But I love what he does in his novels. He really tries to get into the human psyche to understand how people's minds work and what it inspired them to act the way they do. But also as well, because I love settings that are very well described, you get such an amazing sense of what it is, for example, to be down in Louisiana. And so much so that I've traveled a lot over the years in America, only barely traveled through Louisiana. But I do feel that if I was to do another trip to America, I would love to even just exclusively travel around Louisiana for a week or two and see all the places that he's described. And so I love everything about him. His descriptive writing, his evil characters are incredibly well depicted and so evil, so badass. I really love that. Brilliantly, yeah, just descriptive writing, and his own these main characters that he writes about, there's always they're a little bit unhinged. You know, one would have been a sheriff, he lost his job, so now he's kind of a private eye. Would have been an alcoholic, just carrying a bit of baggage around with him, and so a little bit you'd be worried for him even. But yeah, you just feel so much empathy for him, and you know he's a good guy though. And so yeah, I love James Lee Burke as well. He's been a great inspiration, and it's kind of opened me up as well to other genres. You know, to for example, to try thriller writers. But I'm so sniffy now about thrillers in general that I would you know, if somebody's talking to me about a particular writer they might like, maybe James Patterson or someone, I'd say, yeah, but like, have you read James Lee Burke? Because I just want to know what you how you compare notes there, do you know? Because he's as far as I'm concerned, he must be head and shoulders above most thriller writers. He just does everything so well, and because I've read a number of his novels now, and I'm seeing the same standard, the same quality there, which is kind of blows me away. Yeah, and you know, I've been writing for so many decades and still putting it out there, and he's well into his 70s. So yeah, I need to genuflect to that man. Yeah.
Well, you speak so beautifully about other writers. It's very inspiring to see somebody who is filled with a love of literature. And it's very appropriate as well, because you are a writer, as we mentioned at the top of the show. You've released your debut novel, Us Human Towers, which we want to ask you about now as well. And maybe the first question we can ask you about, you know, there's a lot of flawed characters in there, which is so gripping. Yeah, as for us as readers, it's so gripping to see, you know, what they're doing and how's it going to work out for them by the end of the novel. Do you personally think when a novel or a book has a troubled protagonist or troubled secondary characters, it becomes all that more engrossing for the reader?
I do, because, you know, I used to be hammering home to students when I was teaching them drama. I'd say, you know, the key ingredient in drama is conflict. You have to create some sort of a conflict between characters. And, you know, I see that at play as well in the novels, that you the characters themselves can dispense so much of what you need from a conflict point of view. And I suppose as well, like, I'm looking at my writing from my own personal point of view as well, that I can see myself as being a flawed character in my own right. And I suppose it wasn't intentional when I started writing the novel, but as I got into it, I started to infer a little bit of my own life and my own struggles into the main protagonist, Esteban. And so I feel that, you know, we all know we have our frailties and our failings and our faults. And so I think we need to be realistic when we're writing as well. And I think the reader will maybe empathize very well once they see what's at play there with characters. And I think as well, there's so much empathy there that will allow characters with flaws to be to parade themselves into prose or whatever it is. And so yeah, I think flaws are as long as they're kind of realistic and people can run with their struggles. And I guess as well, you're always hoping that they can work things out, and but it's not a perfect world. So, you know, even at the end of my own novel, that you know, I'm not going to just throw down a happy ending. I kind of left it in a way where you see that the main character, he's become very self-aware, but he also knows that he has created havoc in a certain way, and he may continue to do so if he doesn't check himself. And at least with the self-awareness, he knows he can be on a better track now, and maybe not to be involving people in his life that's just inevitably going to bring sadness to those people. So yeah, I think it's important, but I guess it does, maybe it has helped me, and maybe just in a selfish way that I started to look into my own life and put some of that into this story as well. And it's a very real thing that I have had in my life, say, from the point of view of relationships, where I have struggled. And yeah, I know I've hurt people along the way, and never intentionally, but so I felt, you know, I needed to get help and stuff. And so I'm happy to say that I have visited a psychotherapist for 5 or 6 sessions a number of years ago after a breakup. And I felt it incumbent on myself to get to know myself better. And so that was very helpful. And actually as well, I just found a lot of stuff on YouTube, on Google. One little site I came across was interesting psychological facts about human beings. And so I kept a little notebook, and I used to write down very pertinent things. And so that helped me as well. And I guess so I was putting some of myself into this novel, Us Human Towers, something I haven't done with other novels. And, you know, so but it's in a way, maybe it's been even for me a little bit of therapy when writing this story, Us Human Towers. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you've mentioned all those things about, you know, mental health and identity, and because in the book there is a bit of a crisis of identity, and, you know, you've said that the book has a lot of you in it, and the things that you've gone through or the things that you've thought about with regards to relationships and things like that. So what do you think characters are looking for in that specific book, in As Human Towers?
Yeah, well, I mean, for example, I mean, the main protagonist, Esteban, you know, he's arriving in Tarragona on a holiday, and it's I used to feel like that myself, because I traveled in America for many, many years. And I used to say, you know, it's country, it's like the greatest playground in the world. And I don't mean that in a negative way now. I just felt that it's just, you can do what you want, you can go where you want. And so I like the idea in this novel, just the main protagonist going out on a holiday, and it's like carte blanche, you know, whatever happens. There's I suppose we all go on holiday in a way, maybe for just a whole sense of getting away, but maybe a sense of adventure as well. And, you know, especially like a single man, which I have been, you know, as traveling all my life, that things can happen, or you can make things happen. You know, you interact with characters. So I suppose, you know, Esteban, he's got a great life. He's a pilot, but I guess he's out there, and he's certainly open to love, and he's done a little bit of gambling as well. He's a very astute gambler, and so there's that whole risk as well when it comes to gambling. But he's also getting himself involved in a risk situation when he enters a relationship. And you do that, anybody does that when they go into a relationship. So I guess what he has to understand then as the story progresses, that, you know, you can do what you want to a certain extent in life, but you have to bear in mind what might be collateral damage. So even though he becomes very attracted to this lady, and things start off very, very well, things start to break down then when it comes to maybe the commitment side. So yeah, and obviously there's that's a little side of me in him too. Marta, she had lost her mother. Her father went off the rails for a while, and so she was collateral damage then in their lives. And I always wanted to, you know, create this very virtuous young lady, very supportive, very strong in her own way. But I thought she's exactly the kind of character that somebody like Esteban needs. But she's been through the mill herself already, so she can be really there to help him. And she's coming out of a period of suffering herself and bereavement. And so in a way, she is actually the exact foil that a character like Esteban needs. But unfortunately, he just doesn't make the most of that opportunity that she offers. And I suppose there's maybe a telling scene in a novel where they're basically saying their goodbyes, but even when she is taking her leave of Esteban, she is trying to help him. She's trying to say, didn't you say you had already been to a psychotherapist? Maybe you could go back again. And, you know, he's agreeing with her. And so I like the way they're kind of complimenting each other in that way. She went into a very dark place in her life. She got involved with in a number of relationships herself, and she's, you know, seeing the damage that drink can do with her father, because he took to the drink when he lost his wife, her mother. And but I want to get a little comment as well in the novel where she didn't, even though things went very bad for her for a while, she didn't take drugs. I know alcohol is actually technically a drug itself, but you know what I mean. So I wanted to say that because I've seen every day on the news, you know, the damage that drugs are done and in my own community and everywhere today, it's so prevalent. So I kind of wanted her to be able to say that I've done a lot of things, but I haven't done drugs, you know. So yeah, she's had to go through a very difficult time herself. And then, you know, her own father as well, he's had to deal with bereavement. And, you know, I lost my mum nearly 5 years ago. I was very close to my mom, and that hit me very hard, and so I struggled for some time as well, and so I kind of put a little bit of myself there as well into, if you want to look at Marta's father, how he struggled when he lost his wife, or Marta when she lost her mum, take it whatever point of view you want to look at. So it's just the whole damaging effect of bereavement. You know, we're never prepared for it. We're never taught about it in school. We just have to work through it ourselves. And, you know, even my own mum, when she lost her husband, my dad, you know, she struggled for quite a while, but I think what really helped her was just to have family and friends there to support her. And so poor Martin, the story, she's kind of cut adrift, except for her uncle, Tio Pepe. And he's a very solid character. I loved depicting him because he's just one of these individuals that you meet in life that he gets on with it. He's strong in his own way, and he's very matter of fact, very down to earth, and just the kind of person you need. And of course, you know, I've been blessed myself to have some wonderful friends in my own life, especially in the last few years, that I would kind of see in that character, Tio Pepe. Very solid individuals, very humble, and but there for you as well, if you want to talk to him and so on. I suppose when you think about it, there are a number of characters there in the novel that are they're all trying to get through situations or situations that they've already had or are presently trying to do so as well. Yeah.
Wonderful, Stephen. Well, you've been so insightful and honest, you know, answering all the questions. I'm sure people who haven't read the book yet, we'll be rushing to buy it, us Human Towers, and a real pleasure having you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Enda Maria. You've always been an absolute joy to work with. And all I can ever say to you guys is, you know, is just keep up the good work, you know. And you've been so indulgent to me in my writing, and such positive vibes. It was really more than I could ever have imagined. And so it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and talking about the book. And just sincerely to thank you for helping me get it off the ground and fulfill this lifelong dream I've had. And so of course I look forward to working with you guys in the future as well, please God.